From Variety, celebrating more than 115 years covering the business of entertainment, this is the Award Circuit Podcast. All right, pencils down. Nomination voting for the 95th Academy Awards ended on January 17, and now we await the nominations announcement on Tuesday morning, January 24. I'm Michael Schneider, and on this episode of the award-winning Variety Award Circuit Podcast, it's a mega roundtable edition as we dissect final predictions for key categories, including Best Picture. Also on this episode, a chat with the creative team behind Black Panther Wakanda Forever, including director Ryan Coogler. It's all next on this edition of the Variety Award Circuit Podcast. Stay close. Hey, everybody. I am Variety TV editor Michael Schneider. I almost forgot what my title was. That shows you what kind of week it has been. So apologies in advance if we are all sort of slugging through this week, this episode. But it's because it's been busy for everyone, including Janelle Rowley.
Nobody knows what my title is.
Cross for me. What is your title? Do you know
Deputy
your title?
Deputy Awards and Features Editor, which it's been for 9 years, but it keeps showing up differently in places.
We'll just call you Variety's Janelle Rowley.
Yeah, that's why I just say an editor at Variety.
Yeah, Variety Superstar.
Because it is a mouthful. I get it.
Yeah. And Jazz Tank A, do you remember your title?
I actually remember my name too, because Todd is wearing a t-shirt with Jazz on it today.
At the time says Jazz.
Yes.
Jazz.
Yes, my title is Senior Artisans Editor.
Wait, do you have merch, Jazz?
I'm going to start. Right?
You should have merch.
I think we need to have merch for this podcast.
Oh, yeah. Let's do that. Like, I don't have enough stuff clogging up the house right now.
That is true. Yeah. If we send people free merch, they're going to get mad at us.
Janelle's like, I got to move around my Emmys.
Oh, yeah. It's so difficult to navigate.
Yeah, right?
So bougie.
Daytime Emmys.
And finally, someone who I'm sure does have some merch. He just hasn't told us about it. It's Clayton Davis.
Yeah. I'm the vice president of janitorial services here at Variety, and it's a great gig.
Yes, yeah.
He's making a new line of caps.
Yep.
Yeah.
All those trash cans are well taken care of here.
Yeah, that's how Clayton knows where everything's buried, because he's got the scoop on everything.
Mike's feeling
at PMC.
A little morbid today. Yeah.
I love ice cream. Gotta get the scoops.
Gotta get the scoops. Well, I don't know where to begin, because it has been a busy, busy week for everyone. Many, many nominations, many award shows, and prep for the big one.
Big changes in front runners from day to day based on what arbitrary groups give out.
Yeah. And I've been like hunkered down at the Television Critics Association press tour for the past week,
in
Pasadena.
Emerged.
So that's been pretty busy. As we record this, there's still one more day of TCA, but yeah, so a lot going on.
Are you needed there?
So, I will be there, for Apple, the final day. But yeah, it's been an interesting time, but why don't we kink things off with Clayton. What's sort of driving you crazy?
Oh,
that's a loaded question.
Yeah, you know what really grinds my gears? Actually, it's Oscar nomination voting closes. By the time you're hearing this, it's closed. Tuesday at 5 p.m.
So it's too late.
Yep. But
pencils down.
Pass your papers to the front. The last thing that happened before voting closed was Critics' Choice. But I can share, because now this will come out after it's already posted. We have a USC Scripter nominations.
Okay,
now it's not happening in the voting window, but it does give some really good hints. And here they are. I'm pulling them up. Sorry. Your nominees are Women Talking,
wow.
Thank You, Lord Jesus, Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio,
ooh.
She Said, Living, and Top Gun Maverick.
As adapted, wow. Because it's
as
based on a...
So, okay. So if you realize what's missing here, it's Glass Onion.
Yes. Yep. Mm.
But I believe it's not eligible because it's not based on literary material.
And Top Gun was?
Top Gun, the first one's based on an article.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. So I think Glass Onion wouldn't be eligible. I haven't confirmed that yet, but I'm like 90% sure because I went through like history to try to find some precedents. It would be District 9 was nominated, and that was based on a short film.
Right.
So I don't know.
So these have to be adapted. So obviously Women Talking and She Said, but Living. No, okay. So is Living adapted from
Living's
a novel or
from
the movie?
Both. The right. It's, well, in the press release, it's from the novella.
Okay.
The Death of Ivan Illich by Tolstoy.
Okay. So that's three straight up literary adaptions.
Yep.
And then Top Gun.
Top Gun. It says based on the California Magazine article in 1983.
Wow.
And what was the other one?
She Said. Based on Breaking the Sexual... Oh, book. You said that?
Women's Talking.
Oh, Pinocchio.
Pinocchio.
Pinocchio. That is so interesting to me. Has an animated movie ever got nominated for the USC Scripter Award?
I would imagine so, and I can't think off the top of my head. But I think Shrek did, as a matter of fact, if I think back correctly. So, I mean, that is a good clutch, and that may hint to something there. And for Mike Schneider's on the episode... TV included.
Never mind. We don't
know. No, it's all about the TV.
Included The Crown, Fleischman in Trouble, Slow Horses, Tokyo Vice, and Under the Banner of Heaven.
Wow. Ooh. That's an eclectic mix.
Yeah, and they put Under the Banner of Heaven. Well, no, I guess those are, a couple of those are limited series.
Yeah, Under the Banner of Heaven is.
Fleischman's limited series.
Yeah, Fleischman is for the episode The Liver based on the book of the same name. Yeah.
Wow.
Based on a memoir.
So it could be comedy, drama, limited, anything. They just throw them all in there.
Yeah. They just chuck them in.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's that. But Critics' Choice, they love everything.
Of course they do.
In quotes. Everything Everywhere had a very, very strong Critics' Choice.
It's almost showing. Like it's an awesome movie that people adore.
Yeah. Listen, if it was going to do well anywhere, it was going to do well at Critics' Choice. If it couldn't even do well there, then I would be very worried about it. But the fact that it took picture, which I predicted, director is what is the telling moment.
But how do you award that best picture and not best director?
I mean,
you can.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine that. Yeah. You know, I've still struggled with like seeing the Daniels be the one just because that – branch songs, you know, like ooh, typically
fighting words.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we've seen them pass on Ben Affleck, Catherine Bigelow, Bradley Cooper. Like they are a very insulated group. So I'm just waiting to see what they do. But, it took picture, director, supporting actor for Kiyu Kwan. And I was sitting at the table and they said, it's a key sweep.
Yeah.
Aww. And that's what they're calling it on the season. And I was like, I love all of you so much.
Yeah.
Original screenplay and editing. Michelle Yeoh lost to Cate Blanchett, which was interesting. I don't think it's over. Cate Blanchett's definitely in front.
Oh, God, it's so not over.
It's not over, but she's definitely out in front.
I wouldn't even say that.
Yeah. I mean, she has two in a row. That's why. Like, I think Yeoh's going to take SAG, but I think Blanchett is going to probably win BAFTA, and I think we'll flip a coin on the night.
That's true. I forgot about BAFTA.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't Brits. Put – I mean, I always say this. I wouldn't put too much into Golden Globes or Critics' Choice Awards as they share no overlap with Oscar voters. But as we have repeatedly said, there is perception and there is momentum and all of that.
Yeah.
That's what it provides. And it's interesting because the Golden Globes, big winners there were Fabelmans and Banshees, and both of them went
no shows.
Donuts at Critics' Choice. Fabelmans only won Young Actor for Gabriel LaBelle, and Banshees won nothing.
Yeah, so that was that's surprising. Brendan and Colin couldn't be there because they had COVID, correct?
Along with the rest of Hollywood.
Yes.
Yep.
And if they didn't get the COVID at the Golden Globes, they probably got it at Critics' Choice. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Clayton, I think you wrote about this in your column this week. Plug, plug, plug. Do you think Cate Blanchett's speech hurt her?
I don't think it helped her. I don't think it hurt her, if that makes sense. Yeah. So
explain to the kids listening.
Context.
Context. Cate Blanchett, when she won, she pulled what I call the Joaquin Phoenix. When you go up there and you're like, can we get rid of all these, like, you know, award shows and the televised race of it all and just praise performances and get rid of it all? And it really hit some sour notes in the room because it was a really good night. It was like a lot of joy in that room. And I think it was telling of a person who's won two Oscars on the cusp of winning her third that, yeah, let's get rid of all this. Cause then I'm like, yeah, but Michelle Yeoh probably would like this moment too.
Right.
And I think a lot of people read into that. Again, I don't know if it necessarily hurts her, but it just didn't help her speech. And by the way, final Oscar nominations, when they end up coming, there's a really good chance she's the only white woman against other women of color. And that will also be a little telling of, like, you know, not saying a momentum shift, then they're going to, like, look for – so it just perception is reality, and people want something different.
So you and Jazz were both in the room.
Yeah, she was at Blanchett's.
I was at the guitar table.
How did that play? Because honestly, at home, I didn't have a problem with it. I was like, you know, I think we all kind of feel that way, but then like
you don't say it out loud. I couldn't tell.
It seemed like it played okay in the room. Like I thought I heard applause.
The most telling thing was that. Is that you're going to say that, but we've also seen you at every award ceremony that up to this point. And you've been campaigning. And not the Globes, because you were in London
premiering
your other movie. Yeah. But yeah, you've been – I mean, you went to Palm Springs. You did a lot of other things. And everything that pretty much – you're on the circuit. So you can't be like, let's not do this, and then you're doing it. Because Frances McDormand says we shouldn't do this, and we never see her.
Mm-hmm. Right, she walks the walk and talks the talk.
Yeah.
And then shows up for the win.
She shows up for the Oscar, for the kill at the end.
Yep.
She goes for the Oscar and that's it. But Hashtag legend. What was the table like?
No, I mean, I think the table was pleasantly surprised because I think that was the second to last award that was handed out, right? Yep. So, you know, it was a huge night for Everything Everywhere. And Tar, at that point, had only won one for Hilda, which nobody... There was a delayed reaction in finding out about it.
Because it wasn't televised?
No. Well, they said it during the bumpers, but Hilda was double nominated. Because there are a lot of awards, obviously, there. So she was nominated for Women Talking in Tar, so her name popped up.
But you didn't know which movie?
It said Tar, but her and Sarah Polley were in the same bumper. So Sarah Polley saw Hildur's name, got excited for her, and then she won. And then it took her 20 minutes to realize that it was for Tar, not for Women Talking. And she was so happy for her, but it was like...
But it was funny. Moment. But I think to your point about how that played, I mean, at the tape, I mean, everyone was just celebrating Kate's win. And I think that's where the difference of like how it played on TV, how it played in the rest of the room when you're at the table that was surprised played differently.
Yeah. Especially since it looked like Michelle Yeoh was going to win because at that point, the Daniels had already won director. So we were like, oh, okay. So get ready, Michelle Yeoh. And then she didn't. Yeah. But listen, it had a good night. The show moved really well. Like, listen, 3 hours and there are a lot of awards. I don't like televised bumper announcements, but that show it ended on time.
And Chelsea was great, I will say. Chelsea Handel was.
But could we get Seth Rogen next year?
he was great. That CW joke was freaking hilarious.
It was
brilliant.
What was it that he said?
CW had it coming.
The
award show, which is airing the award show, is nominated for zero awards.
Yeah.
And then Glass Onion winning two for ensemble and comedy, which, you know, not Oscar categories, but still momentum. Janelle Monáe gave a great speech. TV side, Better Call Saul.
Fine.
Farewell. Goodbye.
You know, so at least Better Call Saul is getting recognized by critics, by, you know, certain factors, even if the Emmys have just so far just whiffed it.
It's incredible to me it doesn't have a single award from the Emmys.
It's insane.
That's insane.
I mean, they have one more chance. Mm-hmm. It ain't over yet, but
for three episodes,
it's a long shot. Yeah.
Could we also just start the church for Cheryl Lee Ralph, please?
Oh, please.
She said, come close, and I leaned in the room. Like, what do you got to say to me, Mom? Like, I'll listen to everything. She is. She's just incredible.
I felt so bad for Henry Winkler having to follow that.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
I want respect. That was actually really good.
When she goes come close, I think everybody did actually lean in.
Yeah.
Right.
Winkler is so great, man.
Oh, like, he's the greatest.
I mean, he is the best. But I will say one thing about Cheryl Lee Ralph, too, was I saw her at the after party for the Globes, and there ended up being a line of people to take selfies with her, and she was obliging everyone. But it is funny when you see just there are certain stars that everyone just wants a moment with, and it's not always like the A-list, partly because they know the A-list aren't gonna play
you don't
along.
You don't know how many I had to turn down myself. Yeah, like, just sitting there.
Right. Clayton refuses to take photos with anyone now. It's a blatant no policy. But everyone wants a photo with Shirley Ralph, just as I'm sure they do with Key and certain stars who are just of the moment right now.
I mean, the big one was Austin Butler in the room. Oh, yeah. Everybody wanted a picture with
Austin Butler.
Like, I don't want it to be in a photo with Austin Butler.
I know. I knew better. I was like, no. I'm not going to compare to that.
He comes with his own lighting.
Absolutely not.
Jennifer Coolidge was the other one. Yeah. Oh, like, of she course. Just, yeah, she yeah. was.
She looked phenomenal. Like, I loved her. I thought she was like glowing of winners of the night going up there dressed. Her and Cheryl, I thought, looked the best.
Yeah.
It was the glamour with the gloves, too. I think she had gloves on that night, too. And it was just a gorgeous
Talk about two icons who are just having their moment right now. And it's, you know, overdue for both of them, well deserved for both of them. You're just so, like, this is one of the things when we talk about, you know, award shows, do we still, like, and then you have moments and people like that who just are shining. Yeah. And you're like, no, this is fun. This is, I'm so glad that we have a moment where we're just recognizing these stars finally for, you know, just the icons that they are.
Some of us were there in 90-seat theaters that were leaking to see Jennifer Coolidge and Charlie Ralph when they were doing LA theater.
Yeah.
So.
and as the awards people here, we, like, it may sound like we're biased here, but awards really give you a good snapshot of a season, whether they're nominated or not. Mm. And we get to talk about, like, why hasn't Ray Seahorn won something? If you don't have awards in that vacuum, those Ray Seahorn stories don't make it out to the masses. Mm. So that's why they're always really important.
Yeah. Did you all catch Mike's low-key humble brag about going to the Golden Globes after party?
Yeah. Because
I was only invited to a Golden Globes after party about an hour after the Golden Globes were over. Mm-hmm. Received an invite, by the way. Yeah.
Come on down.
Yep. Thanks. I'm in my pajamas.
Yes, that's awkward. That's,
But wait, other moment of the night, because now will lead us to final Oscar predictions. Brendan Fraser.
Yeah.
Fraser, not Frasier. Mm-hmm. We have learned to say his name correctly. Other people that are changing their name pronunciations. I've never cried in the room before for acceptance speech, and I cried. Like, it was beautiful. He won Best Actor for The Whale. He went up there and he referenced, like, the final moments of the movie, and it was pretty wonderful. He's the best.
I have goosebumps just you talking about it.
Him and Key, first of all, that they hugged.
Yeah.
The way Brendan
Encino Man co-stars.
Yep.
Yeah.
And let's talk about, kind of going along what we're talking about is sort of some of the narratives of this year. And Clayton, you and I were talking about this earlier. Sort of every year there are these certain just like stories that everyone wraps their arms around. Yeah. Last year it was Troy Kotsur.
Yeah.
This year, Key, also Brendan. Yeah. But, you know, to see Key like out there, someone who had been basically out of the spotlight for 30 years, having this comeback year. And what a comeback year. And it's just, everyone just loves that story, loves him, seems like a really good guy. He was even at TCA to bring back TCA for a second because he's in the new show American Born Chinese coming to Disney Plus with Michelle Yeoh, by the way.
Was she there?
Yeah, she was there as well. So the fact that they're out there even promoting their new TV show on top of the Everything Everywhere run that they're having right now. It is just fun to see him back and the story that he's been, sort of playing with this past year.
Yeah, I would say even, like, she didn't go anywhere. She's been around for 30 years. But even watching Angela Bassett have this moment right now is pretty remarkable because, you know, 30 years ago she was nominated for What's Love Got to Do with It, and there's one of those things that you kind of say to yourself, like, yeah, I think, you know, our Angela Bassett moment has passed. And then here she comes, you know, she's going to make history as a Marvel superhero actor to get nominated, first one ever. The most bananas stat is that she's going to be the 8th oldest winner ever in that category, passing Judi Dench when she won for Shakespeare.
That's bonkers. That is bonkers.
They are the same age.
She doesn't look
Angela Bassett is 64 years old. Like,
okay,
she'll be the oldest black.
Her and Tony Goldwyn need to tell me their secrets.
She'll be the oldest black actor ever to win an Oscar.
That's bonkers.
It's
older than Morgan Freeman.
When Morgan was like 62 or something.
Wow. I mean,
like just smidges past him.
That's crazy.
Wow. It's
definitely black woman. I know for sure. Black ever. I think she might be. Like, I think she just gets past Morgan.
Wow. That's so crazy. But it's also that thing of like people suddenly realize, oh, wait, she has not won an Oscar. She's, you know.
And realizing how bad you looked when you were 17 years old, because you don't look like that at 64. Because like.
Also, Morgan Freeman was born 60.
Yeah.
So
true.
He has an Oscar.
There's certain people who have always been old.
Yeah.
He's God. I mean, let's just face it.
You remember when in Driving Miss Daisy, when he like they put the old age makeup on him? Yeah. It's like now that's Morgan. It's like Christopher Lloyd is finally old enough to be playing all those roles he played in the 80s.
Right. He's finally Doc Brown.
One last bit, Mike. One last bit, Mike, that we should have just mentioned. Jeremy Allen White is going towards Emmys for The Bear.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And Abbott winning comedy series was so
yeah.
heartfelt. I'm so happy.
Yeah, the Abbott train is continuing, so it's going to be down. Right now, it feels like Abbott and the Bear.
Yep.
Such a good show. Have you seen the egg drop episode of Abbott Elementary? Were they?
Yes.
Yeah. I have never laughed and cried so hard when the little boy's egg cracks. He's like, oh no, Ralph. And then later, Ralph Jr.
I also am ready for a Chris Perfetti nomination this year. Like, he's really stealing that show low-key for me.
Yeah, it's everyone's going to have their moment.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But back to the Jeremy Allen White. That freight train. And again, the Bear was also at TCA. And they couldn't even talk about season two, because even though the season's been written, the actors haven't even seen the scripts yet.
Oh, wow.
So that's one of those things where sometimes when you bring a show, but you don't have new episodes to show to TCA, the critics, the reporters get pretty up in arms, like, why haven't you shown us anything? There's nothing to talk about. But there are those shows that come back just for kind of a victory lap, and now everyone wants a piece of them, and everyone wants to just talk about, just bask in the glory of that previous season. And that was the case with The Bear. Everyone was just so excited to see that cast, to see that show now, and to talk about it in a way that maybe a year ago they didn't, because as you remember, that was a sleeper hit. No one was really talking or thinking about The Bear when that show launched. It was an organic grassroots hit, and now everyone wants to talk about it. Everyone can't wait to see that
Cable Strikes
season.
Back this year at the Emmys is going to be a good, nice run for it. And I mean, listen, we don't know what else is coming, but good spot to be in right now, and Jeremy Allen White could break out for those who didn't watch Shameless.
But comedy?
I mean, listen, we're on that Barry thing too, right?
Yeah, you're like, right. You're right.
What's a comedy anymore?
It's true.
I mean, Abbott's a comedy.
Yeah, but it's...
Abbott really is a comedy.
Abbott really makes me laugh out loud, though. Yeah.
Bear's like, huh?
Bear's like laugh, but it's very nervous laughter.
Right. Yeah, cringe comedy is something to be said. So, I mean, we'll see what happens, but... it's going to be a good run. Yeah. But now, Oscars.
Dun, 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 dun.
Okay. Nice. Just real quick, I think this is the best way to do it. We're all going to agree on locks here. Obviously, Mike's going to have the most important word in this conversation.
Because I'm more
He saw Puss in Boots.
I've seen a number of these movies, by the way. You should be impressed with
I am.
I like that you're actually pointing at your
He's pointing
at his screen. Seen that. The glee on your face.
I'm just going to pick the movies I've seen.
Yep. So. Best Picture, there are six sure things. Whatever order you want to say it in, but it's Top Gun, Fablemans, Banshees, Everything Everywhere All at Once, Tar, and Elvis. Are we all in agreement there? Those six are in?
Yeah, I think so.
Those are good, because so we definitely have 10 this year?
Yes, it has to be 10.
We definitely have 10.
Yeah. Okay, we're in a good
world. Yeah, absolutely. I think all of those are in.
Okay. Then there are about 10 movies going for the last four spots. I think I'm going to go with Black Panther Wakanda Forever with PGA. And Angela Bassett winning.
Mm. Yeah.
I think it's going to like just...
PGA is hard to argue with.
It's hard to push it over. I think The Whale is also getting in for the same reason with PGA and Brendan Fraser. I wouldn't have predicted it before PGA, but I think PGA told me something. What do you don't think so?
I don't know. Mm. There's only, what, four slots left? Yeah. And I'm very high on Women Talking, RRR. There's probably more movies you're going to mention that, you know...
Then we have the European contingency, the international vote. And that's what's the hardest thing to track. That could go for All Quiet on the Western Front.
Yeah, that's the one I was going
to
say.
That can go to Living. That can go to Triangle of Sadness. And that can go to RRR.
I'm surprised Triangle of Sadness hasn't had a stronger showing, to be honest. People love that movie.
I agree. I feel like people aren't talking about it anymore.
I mean, it had a really good BAFTA long list showing. BAFTA noms are out Thursday, by the way, when this is out already.
Forgive me for not knowing, was Dolly on the long list?
Yes, Dolly was on the long list. And it was for directing, picture, editing, or it had a really great BAFTA showing on the long list.
We should dedicate a whole hour just to that movie, because I had a very animated fight last night over the ending with someone.
Well, you should bring that someone on. Yep. That's a new spin-off podcast.
If we actually could get this person on the podcast, it would be a coup. I'll say that.
I love that.
And then we have
it was Tom Cruise. She was arguing with Tom Cruise
about the end of Triangle of Sadness. Yeah. And then we have the populist choices, Avatar and Glass Onion. We have four sequels at PGA.
Wow.
I don't think all four are making it. Just to put in context, we have had eight sequels in Oscar history make Best Picture, and we have four this year. And that's going to be
interesting. None of them have two in the title. Have you noticed
that's
that?
That's right.
So maybe people would forget that they're sequels as a result.
That's true. So you they don't know Glass Onion. Avatar, they're going to know.
But, yeah.
See,
In Avatar, boy, that's hard to deny.
Yeah.
I think that misses, actually.
Really? Mm.
I think if you watch that movie at home, because it went on the Academy portal last Monday. A lot of Academy members are watching stuff at home, and I think if you watch it at home, it
but loses. Do you think they're watching that one at home, though? That one, I think Academy members know they need to see it in the theater.
They screened it over the last week or two, as someone had told me, about 2,000 people. 2,000 Academy members have come out to see it in the last 2 weeks. That's so horrible. People yeah. have gone.
Big turnout at our screening on Saturday
yeah.
night.
Mm-hmm. They did it two a day at DGA. Like they know you have to see it on the big screen.
Yeah.
But a lot of the older members who are ride or die voting every time, they haven't really returned to the movies, with the exception of there's one movie I saw this year, and that was Top Gun Maverick. And I hear that a lot.
Yeah.
So I don't know how many came out for Avatar. And the length, I think, was like, oh, I don't want to sit in a theater for 3 hours. Yeah. So I think some are watching it at home, and I don't think it plays as well.
But to that, I wonder if Babylon – I don't know, but yeah. like could, they yeah. do like totally that, could. And it's gotten in it's about some of the crafts, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Or women, does women talking miss? Well,
the Bubbling Under sequels, Avatar or Glass Onion? What do you think is more likely?
Avatar.
Yeah.
It's funny that I would have said Avatar over Black Panther like a week and a half ago, but like
Black Panther's making a comeback.
What about Pinocchio getting in when we've been talking about how Pinocchio it's could? Doing.
I mean, if Pinocchio gets an adapted screenplay, it's shortlisted in sound, it's going to get animated feature, original score, and original song. That's like 5-6 nods. There was actually an Academy voter that told me in the director's branch that not them, but their very good friend was voting for Guillermo in director.
Sure.
And I was like, you know what? Why not?
Good for him.
People love him.
Didn't you post that if he's nominated, he'd be...
Well, if he's nominated in adapted screenplay and animated feature, he's like, he would get into like five Oscar categories.
Kenneth Branagh
has seven, which Alfonso Cuarón is probably going to break this, is going to join him this year because he's has a live action short. So they'll both have seven categories. But picture is kind of up in the air. I'm going with the kind of two Europeans, I think. That's going to be All Quiet and Triangle.
Chance for A Man Called Otto, which did very well this weekend, by the way, in release.
Yeah.
I think it might have just been too late, but I love that movie.
I think it was late to the party.
And it feels like a perfect Academy movie.
Yeah.
It is. If it was a month earlier, I'd be like, I still think Tom Hanks is on the bubble for actor, but I mean, there's no indication of it. And listen, there's still possibly After Sun and Woman King.
I was going to say Woman King.
I mean, I want Woman King really bad, so, but.
The Menu is my heart pick.
Yeah, I was about to say The Menu because I feel like people are really talking about The Menu.
It's so good. It's on HBO Max now.
Yeah. Yes. That could be why people are talking about it so much.
Should definitely be there in screenplay at least.
I mean, and production
design. Or maybe watch out for Ralph Fiennes. Like maybe he's
I mean, that would
spot.
Make my day. Mm. Yeah. Yes.
So we'll see. All right, moving on to director. We're going to probably disagree on this, but I think there are three sure things: Steven Spielberg, Martin McDonagh, Todd Field. The internet says the Daniels.
Holding on to the Daniels.
And I love the Daniels, and I love that movie. It's my top 10 of the year. So this isn't me being a hater. I just don't trust them. Like they've done me dirty before.
I just can't see them not getting in. Just can't.
Yeah.
So James Cameron, more likely?
I think he missed DGA. That's a home field advantage. He missed. I think we're going to get a European vote block.
Ruben?
Could be Ruben. Could be Baz Luhrmann, because I think Baz really, leans European.
And that movie is him, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, because I know there's going to be a lot of people upset that there's going to be no women directors this year, because it looks like we're not going to have women directors with Sarah Polley and Gina Prince-Bythewood. But I think Charlotte Wells
for After
Sun. She did an amazing job.
Might crack into that. Because that's also a very European-leaning film. Was in the 10 at BAFTA. Maybe she's the one that cracks
interesting.
Through.
You think over Sarah and Gina.
Yeah, which would be nuts. Yeah. Like the European vote, we just cannot get it because there's so many. Because Edward Berger's in the conversation for All Quiet on the Western Front. I think Inyadi Du is actually even on the table because that branch kind of comes to their own and be like, thank you for trying, and we're going to give you something anyway. So there's that.
What about RRR?
Don't tempt me with this.
playing with Clayton's emotions.
Yeah, I was like, listen, I'm very sensitive these days. But listen, watch out for Darren Aronofsky.
Of course,
very Phantom Thread. Paul Thomas Anderson moment. So who knows?
All right.
Actor, Four Locks, Austin Butler, Brendan Fraser, Colin Farrell, Bill Nye, whoever. I mean, I think those four are in. By the way, we have a race right now because Austin and Colin won the Globe. Brendan won Critics' Choice. So we are looking like 2002 at the moment. So go with Jesus. There's a fifth spot. Adam Sandler got it at SAG. Yeah. I'm not convinced it's him that gets in the end.
That'd be great if it was.
Yeah. I think
we need Oscar nominee Adam Sandler.
It's either, I believe, Gabriel LaBelle for Fablemans because they'll just like go straight down the line on it. Or it's got to be a former nominee like a Hugh Jackman, a Tom Hanks, or a Tom Cruise because since 1932, we've never had a Best Actor lineup of all first-time nominees.
Ralph Fiennes is a former nominee, just saying.
Exactly. Also on the table. Which, by the way, pleasant surprise if that like happened because we've been trying to – 26 years, 24 years since he's been nominated last.
I know the Academy, and I'm sure ABC would love Tom Cruise there because they think about all the things you could do with him. I mean, he'll be there regardless, but if he's nominated,
they need him to skydive onto the top of the Dolby.
Absolutely, that's what I was alluding to. Like, can you imagine if he's nominated and maybe he then would be willing to do something crazy like that?
Yeah,
and you open the show with that.
And he's also going to be nominated regardless because he's a producer on the movie, so that's going to be good that he's guaranteed there. Yeah. But double nominated is like. Like a then good incentive.
He might be game to fly in and then skydive.
Give us one of the Toms. Tom Hanks or Tom Cruise. We'll take one.
Tom.
And throw in Jeremy Popoli.
Well, there's also Paul Mescal. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. But again, going back to the BAFTA of it all.
Actually, you know, and I think maybe that secret fifth spot is a switcheroo of Brendan Gleeson.
I've heard,
I
don't think so.
Two or three people have said, I voted for Brendan and Colin in lead. At least I don't think it's enough, and I don't think he's missing. But like Michelle Williams, we're going to get to in a second, I think Brendan's a potential something if he's on
the opposite
ballot.
Of a Lakeith Stanfield.
I mean, listen, we've seen it done a million times from supporting to lead. We don't see it a lot the other way around. So we'll see. Anyone else you think you're looking at?
I mean, there's people I'm hoping
Do you think Diego's on the table? Diego Calva for Babylon?
I don't know. It depends on how much they've responded to Babylon. Like, it could really surprise us that morning.
Yeah. Someone was telling me that they really think it could be Jeremy Pope. And I would love that.
I can see that.
I was open to that, but I just feel like no one's seen the movie. Well, that's usually what it comes down to. Have you seen the movie? Mike?
No. It's on the list.
Yeah, but you are a good barometer.
Yes.
But like, what have you seen? And then
I'm sure you're getting to this, but the Andrea Riseborough argument.
Oh my gosh.
Let's talk about this. Oh my God.
Right now.
I've never seen something so bananas in real time. Like the fact that Cate Blanchett, that was the first thing that came out her mouth when she won the Critics' Choice Award for Andrea Riseborough's performance.
Why is that? Like,
I don't know. I don't know what she knows. I don't know what she has on everyone. And this, I am not
jazz. You're at the table. Like, was it discussed?
No. But like the amount, like Demi Moore, Allison Janney, Kate Winslet did a Q&A and moderated a conversation with her. As Clayton said, it was like,
I don't what? Know. Listen,
for folks listening who maybe aren't up to speed on this weird campaign, explain to people what's going on.
Actually, it's a grassroots campaign, which, by the way, I love to see because people have tried this before.
Yeah, it's always fun. Like, you know, remember the year that who was it? Who was taking out all those weird
ads?
Dowd did do it.
Yes,
Melissa Leo is who you're thinking.
Melissa Leo, my favorite moment of that season.
And she won, although she was going to
but
win.
But it came. It's come out of nowhere, right?
And David Lynch, remember when he used to do weird campaigns?
Yeah. Yeah. Empire for Laura Dern. Yeah, there are people who do it, so we see it done, but we've never seen it really like take off. By the way, some of the tweets and social stuff seem like very copy and paste, so they obviously have gotten the word out to people to share. But when Cate Blanchett went up there and said, Andrea Riseborough, there's a film that she's in, To Leslie, distributed by Momentum Pictures, by the way. It's a very small indie distributor that can't like play in the Oscar game like that. And the fact that it's like bubbling around is just – I don't think it's going to amount to a nom, but it's also just weird to – like it's making us like all question ourselves. I think that's what
is – She's a very good actor and she's very, very good in the movie. And people, you know, her – people really seem to like her and support her, and you know, it's weird how much her peers want to see this. Is kind of the cool thing.
It's the spirit of it all. Like I'm down for that, but like also just like, oh my God, like it just is really taken off. So there's that. But because that, this is where we are in Best Actress. We have Blanchett, Yeo are in. And then pretty sure Viola Davis is mm-hmm. in because she's got in everywhere.
Yeah. She's Viola Davis.
Right. It would be a big miss if she missed. But she's got in everywhere. There's no need to doubt her. Then we have what looks like four-ish actresses. Ana de Armas, Danielle Deadwyler, Michelle Williams, Olivia Colman.
Now, Michelle Williams missing at SAG might be the best thing that could have happened to her, sort of like Kristen Stewart last year,
yep.
if it rallies people, or it could have the opposite effect.
I think there are a lot of people that are voting for her in support.
Supporting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm waiting to see if she pops up there.
Yeah, and I'm just inclined right now to think that she's either in supporting or she's not there at all.
So remind us now how that works how people are they submitted in one, but they could still end up in another
category? Oscar can vote for you in whichever category for acting that they want. So they call you lead supporting, doesn't matter. They could just do that. SAG honors the submission. Now, what one SAG voter that was on the nomcom told me was they looked for her in lead and didn't see her. I said it wrong. Yeah. They went to lead, voted for whoever they were voting for, then went to supporting, and then went to look for her, and they obviously couldn't find her. And by that time,
they already missed their
lead. Yeah, well, they just figured like, oh, she's just not here for whatever reason. They didn't think about it.
Mm.
So while we know campaigns like the back of our hand, we're like, we know they're going lead or supporting. There are others that just don't. And this boils down to the call of going lead, which everyone was questioning at the top of the season. If she went supporting, I don't think we'd be entertaining Angela Bassett. I love that we're having Angela Bassett, but Angela Bassett has really fell into this because Michelle Williams moved out. Women Talking can't agree on a woman, and it's just happening. So I don't know what happens now.
Interesting.
But Anna, I think, is getting some of that European vote we talked about.
I mean, she hasn't. Even people who don't necessarily like that movie appreciate that performance.
Yeah. Someone told me, and it makes sense, what the detractors say about the movie here, that's par for the course in Europe. Then they think that's cinema. So I mean, we take that. And so that leaves the last spot, and I think it's Danielle Deadwyler or Michelle Williams. And I'm just going to hope to God it's Danielle Deadwyler. I mean, I think Michelle Williams is great. I just think she's supporting. But I think Danielle.
We always knew Best Actress would be a bloodbath. Yeah.
But maybe Margot Robbie, I was really believing in a while, but she didn't make BAFTA long list. And Brad Pitt did. So that's why I think that maybe it's just not her. But Olivia Colman's Olivia Colman.
Yeah.
Look out for her.
Don't vote against Olivia Colman. She squeaks in.
And she wins Emmys when Emma Corrin's supposed to. So, yeah, watch out. And then supporting actor, really quick. I'm going what I call the 2-2-1. I think we're going to get two Banshees boys, two Fabelmans boys, and then Kiyu Kwan.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, continues. That's so interesting. Couldn't we have two Everything Everywhere All at Once boys and get James Hong in there?
So I'm so glad you said that because I call this the Leonardo DiCaprio Revenant, or Leonardo DiCaprio every time, actually. He always brings someone in with him. For the Revenant in particular, I think he was getting such a plurality of the vote
mm-hmm.
that year that on those ballots, Tom Hardy was on those ballots, so he got into supporting. I think Kiyu Kwan is getting such a plurality of the votes. I wonder if James Hong is just added on to that.
And I would love that.
That would be bananas.
He's really good, too. I mean, it's not just the fact that he's James Hong, but he's
every scene he's in.
Yeah. But then he's also competing with On the Bubble people, Eddie Redmayne, Ben Whishaw, which I've been hearing a lot about.
Oh, my gosh, he's so great. Yeah. And Eddie Redmayne hasn't missed yet, has he?
He missed something. He missed Critics' Choice.
Ah.
But he got Globe and SAG, which mm-hmm. hurt. And then Brad Pitt has Globe. Brian Tyree Henry has Critics' Choice.
Oh, he's so good.
And then there's still the Tom Hanks of it all, if you believe that Elvis is about to make some serious noise.
I think if you see Causeway, it's very hard to not vote for Brian Tyree Henry.
Yeah, that's true.
Who, by the way, and he'll have his Oscar in the near future, I have no doubt. But, looking at him, you're just like, it's so exciting because you know in, 10 years, probably less, he's going to be one of our greatest living actors. I mean, he probably already is, but the rest of the world is going to know.
It's just hard to those lone acting nominees, especially in supporting, when you're not a mega A-lister mm-hmm. is hard to do. Yeah. Even Eddie Redmayne, I think, is not big enough to be the lone nominee for his movie quite yet. So, I mean, it obviously can be proven wrong. It's just very hard. Penelope Cruz is like the last one to really do it when she won for Vicky Cristina Barcelona.
Yeah.
But even then, we thought Vicky Cristina was getting in for original screenplay until it missed. So that's that.
And she was nominated for 9, wasn't she? Like the sole nominee.
Yeah. Got other noms too. After being the only nominee for your film. Yeah. The only nominee for your film. And then last thing about that, I heard David Lynch votes.
Oh my God, of course. He's brilliant. If you can vote for Judd Hirsch in Fablemans, who's also great,
for one scene,
why would you not vote for David Lynch?
Like, I wonder.
Yeah. You know what's interesting? I feel like a lot of those times when people win for one scene, it's a supporting actress, like Beatrice Straight or Judi Dench, who technically was in more than one scene and fully deserved that win. But does that happen with men that often?
Shortest runtime I can think of. I can't think fast enough. But there's been nothing shorter than Judi Dench and Beatrice Straight. So usually it's that even when you are supporting quote unquote like Anthony Hopkins, you go lead and win there. So it just depends. And then supporting actress, this is where throw dice, throw whatever you throw darts. Angela Bassett. Let me say this. I know that Carrie Condon's getting nominated, but I know she's not number one to win at the moment, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can't call her a winner, but I know she's the only one. This is the only one I know that definitely is getting nominated.
Oh no! I thought that you skipped Barry Keoghan, but then I realized you said the Banshees
Boys.
Yeah.
Oh, Barry! Yes. Yeah, I think Barry's in.
Yeah, sure. I'm hearing a lot of votes for Barry.
Barry, and actually, Barry's a good, interesting segue into supporting actress because him and Stephanie Hsu are what I call the purity votes. I think those are like we love this performance, and you're not writing a career. You're not writing like the narrative. It's just like, no, you're really kind of the best part of the movie.
Yeah.
And we recognize that. So it'd be interesting to see.
How do you not nominate Stephanie Hsu?
And everybody else.
Yeah. Like, I'm sorry, but. Yeah.
I'd love to see her get in.
I think it's happening, but
So there's Carrie Condon, Angela Bassett feel good. Jamie Lee Curtis feels pretty good. Even though there are some people who believe that. I saw someone say that they're going to be a switcheroo. That Stephanie makes it and Jamie doesn't,
I think if one makes it, they both do.
If you're going to count Stephanie, I think Jamie has to be there. Then you have Hong Chau,
so good,
riding in with Brendan Fraser,
riding that wave of the whale.
Yeah. Look at that.
Yeah. Sorry, Mike, I took care.
Also, like secret thing that people have been telling me, like really should be for The Menu.
That's what I was thinking.
She's brilliant in The Whale, though. I think she's great.
But I think and we've discussed this, The Menu being on HBO, them watching that will help her on that ride.
I think she's just on Brendan Fraser ballots. I think that's just what it's down to.
I think she's the best performance in that movie.
And then you have Stephanie Hsu, got in SAG, got Critics' Choice, doesn't have Globe. So it's looking good for her. Then we have my Michelle Williams theory that could possibly come to fruition. Dolly De Leon. She has Globe.
Please. How did Critics' Choice miss Dolly De Leon?
I don't know. That's weird. But we did Buckley, which was also interesting. Because Buckley, that's the only place she's gotten in all season.
I wonder how close Dolly was, though, between that.
I think all of them are within hair. I don't think there's anyone running away with the votes. I think literally, like, we could see some
very
anarchy,
close.
Some anarchy.
Guys, I think Mike fell asleep.
No, he's taking it all in. But Mike, can I share my Nina Hoss theory?
Yeah.
If Cate Blanchett is one or two, my Leonardo DiCaprio, Tom Hardy thing, does that mean that Nina is on those ballots? And maybe because I think she's European vote. She is.
She's huge.
She's huge in Europe.
I would love to see Nina Hoss get in. Like, and I really hope.
But there's also people who don't like Tar, so I get it.
Really?
Yeah, there are people. I mean, listen, it's Power of the Dog Part 2. Like,
oh gosh, that's so interesting.
I think it's divided like that.
Oh, that's a good analogy.
Yeah,
Clayton bringing the heat.
Yeah, no, I saw it and I was like, oh, I love this. It'll never win Best Picture. Like it was like that quick. It came to me. So I don't know. You don't think Nina Hoss is? Do you think she just missed?
Not with that lineup. I'm sorry. It's just
we always get one WTF though. That got nothing before.
It's always fun to have a WTF.
She could be the WTF.
Yeah, Reese Witherspoon at the Emmys last year. That was your WTF. Then there's Claire Foy, Janelle Monáe. She has Globe and Critics' Choice. Kiki Palmer still bubbling. I heard a lot of Tuso Mbedu.
I mean, yeah.
Oh, gosh.
She's fantastic.
What a performance.
Did you mention Dolly De Leon?
Yeah, we,
as we mentioned.
Yeah. I told you he was asleep.
I was. Yeah,
he has a, the guy's been working nonstop. Yeah,
can we go back to Dolly for a minute? Just that, like, what does Triangle do? What do you think Triangle does on the day?
I keep thinking it's going to be a big showing, but now I don't know. Like I said, I'm surprised it hasn't been stronger this season.
I have this weird feeling. It's like picture and picture only. Like, it's going to be something like really weird.
Or like maybe director, I could see him getting
like
maybe, in.
Or yeah, like be the lone director, or it's like picture
people
and screenplay.
Love that movie. Like, I thought that movie would be more divisive, and yet I'm just hearing love for it.
Okay, and song, Clayton, that's your favorite category.
Yep, we're gonna have Not Do Not Do. It's gonna be great. We're gonna have Diane Warren because she's Diane Warren. Rihanna's there. I think we're gonna get the Ciao Papa from Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio. The last spot to make Janelle happy. Spirited. I think Hugh Jackman talking crap about Ryan Reynolds actually really helped.
Great nagging. Great campaigning.
Yeah, they've been doing a great job. Yeah, campaigning.
And it's a great song.
And Ryan's promised, right?
Yep, he said so. He will attend and sing. I don't know about Will Ferrell. I hear he doesn't really like attention that much.
Yes, exactly.
Should have performed Eurovision song.
Actually, maybe their campaign helped Hugh Jackman, Best Actor.
Mm-hmm. Well,
there you go.
I guess we will find out. All will be told.
We'll be back in a week to talk about nominations,
yeah,
right?
And see if you were right or wrong. Actually, we will keep Clayton honest.
We'll see. I'll be on ABC News that morning. You can watch me.
Just 2 a.m.
Being tired. I have my call times at 3. It's going to be great.
All right. Well, we'll see y'all then. Bye-bye. Have a great week.
Bye. Bye,
after the break, some of the creative team behind Black Panther: Wakanda Forever. From Los Angeles, this is the Award Circuit Podcast. And we're back. It's the Variety Award Circuit Podcast. I'm Michael Schneider. In crafting the sequel to Black Panther, the biggest challenge Ryan Coogler and the team behind Wakanda Forever faced was how to return to the franchise after star Chadwick Boseman passed away in 2020. During a Black Panther Wakanda Forever artisan screening series conversation, Variety's Jazz Tanque talked to Coogler, screenwriter Joe Robert Cole, producer Nate Moore, composer Ludwig Göransson, and cinematographer Autumn Durald Akapau about how they navigated moving the story forward without the Black Panther himself.
We wanted the film to have this feeling of like the fog of grief. And everybody knows that feeling when you lose somebody who's important to you. You're kind of moving through time and space as if you're dreaming, you know, actually hoping that you are, hoping that it's a dream that you'll wake up from, you know. And I thought that you know, what anamorphic lenses do with the warping on the edges and the shallow depth of field, it could add to that. You know, I've been making films professionally about 10 years, and it's always cool when you get to do something new and it feels like you're, like, jumping off of a cliff, you know. And I remember she threw the lenses up, and they looked so beautiful, you know. And we were testing, I think we were testing the 35 and the 100, and we shot close-ups on the 35, and we shot close-ups on the 100, and I knew, I was like, yo, this 35, we're going to shoot the whole movie on this. You know what I mean? Like I just remember how it looked in one of those close-ups, and we talked about it, and she was like, really? And I'm like, yeah, this is the one.
Good friends we have, and good friends we've lost along the way.
Nate, I'm going to start with you. You know, as a producer, you have pushed for diversity and Black characters in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Talk about the legacy of Chadwick and T'Challa and how that was going to be represented in Wakanda Forever.
It's no secret that when we were first setting out to make this movie, Chadwick was around, and we very much planned to and were excited about revisiting Wakanda with T'Challa in it. And then we lost him and had to deal with the very real and personal ramifications of that. You know, he was not only, I would argue, a big reason why T'Challa was who he was on screen. He leaned into a lot of the things that we, even when we were doing Civil War, weren't thinking about. A lot of that was Chadwick. So Chadwick and T'Challa were very, very intertwined. But, you know, after you get over the shock of losing your friend and also the star of the movie, you have to figure out what to do next, and you go through all of the thoughts that you would naturally have, like, should you even do this movie? And in talking with Ryan and Kevin and the team, I think we felt that Chadwick would have wanted us to go back to Wakanda and revisit the place that he helped to put on the map and that he helped to really breathe life into. Because to some degree, I think Chadwick, more than all of us, knew what Wakanda meant for especially kids. So it was about, how do we honor the spirit of that character and this world without the guy who helped us make it? Recasting was never really a question we considered. And so I don't want to speak for Ryan, but, you know, Ryan and Joe really figured out a way, I think, to allow the characters in the film to experience what we were experiencing in real time, because that was the only way that we felt we could move forward in an honest way as storytellers, and hopefully make something that audiences then could watch and experience and hopefully help them get through the loss that we were getting through ourselves.
I am queen of the most powerful nation in the world, and my entire family is gone.
We were fortunate to have built a great working relationship with each other, Joe and myself and Nate and Kiana Davidson, who was an exec who works with Nate. We were in the process of getting the script in shape over Zoom when Chadwick passed away. And we would have these meetings, you know, like the, you know, often the four of us, you know, just talking about the script. And they quickly kind of became deeper than just writing sessions. Because Nate and Joe and I, you know, we knew Chadwick so well. He had affected our lives in such a profound way that it was nice to be figuring it out with people who knew the guy and who knew me, you know, and we kind of found our way forward together.
One of the great things about the process is, and you know, is Ryan's leadership, to be honest, his collaborative nature, the compassion that he operates under. And so the process becomes something, like you said, you look forward to, that you're creating with someone that feels like family. And I bet if you go down the line and you talk to everyone, they'll say something very similar. And so it starts with the leadership, and that is honestly Nate and Ryan. And you know, we had that on the first film, and you know, obviously this film, you know, losing Chad was unforeseen and something that, you know, created a certain sense of tension and certain sadness, and we had to work through that, and their leadership helped us.
Autumn, your work as a cinematographer on this is phenomenal.
Yes.
So talk about the conversations that you had with him and what it was like, and this whole underwater world that he had created.
What Ryan does so well is that, it's funny that he's here and I'm talking about him, but that he chooses the people in his realm to make these films so wisely. And we are a family when we make this. And I think you can do your best work when you have someone in leadership that supports you and trusts you and is an amazing collaborator. Early on, he brought me on to be involved with boarding and previs, which was lovely to kind of get to know someone and to figure out what they kind of their vision was. But with always the kind of idea to make it feel as grounded and realistic as possible so your audience can relate, and all these emotions of grief and loss and motherhood and these strong female characters were all very important to Ryan. The earliest directive was, it was important that it feel real. Like, Ryan wanted it to feel real, and so all of our department heads got together and made sure that all of our references were accurate. So we put as much as we could in water. We shot as much in prep as we could underwater. And I think the most important thing was that the lighting be accurate, that it have emotional quality to it. He wanted a deep space environment, like a deep space movie, but underwater. So sometimes in underwater, there's, in the depths of the sea, you can't see much, and that creates an emotional quality. And with darkness, you can tell as much in the darkness as you can with showing people the light.
Ludwig, talk about getting the call from Ryan that he was going to be working on Wakanda Forever and the conversations that you had about how you would approach the sound for Namor and this film.
One thing that's so incredible to work with Ryan is that how early he involves the composer and how early involves me in the process. You know, we've been working for almost 14 years now, and I feel like I'm one of the first persons to get to read the script. For this movie, especially, the thing that was very different was one thing that was Chadwick is not in it anymore. So how are we going to move on? Are we going to use the themes from the first movie? How would we use the instruments from the first movie? Because the instruments are so, like the talking drum, for example, as soon as you hear it, you start thinking and feeling of T'Challa and of Chadwick. So how can we use that in the new movie? How are we even going to be able to use it? You know, conversations like that. And then obviously talking about Namor and the telecoms and how to approach that music, which is, you know, that tribe was very inspired by Mayan culture. And Mayan music was forcibly erased. So we don't know what Mayan music really sounded like. So I decided early on about going to Mexico and meet up with music archaeologists and that are experts in this field of Mayan music. And they've been finding instruments in the graves, and they can look on the instruments and see what flute holes, they see in the flute holes the fingerprints, which holes are being used the most. So they can kind of reimagining that, okay, these intervals were played a lot. And these are sounds and instruments that I've never heard before. And like turtle shells, different whistles, the seashell, which is a big part of Namor sound. And so working with these experts was a very incredible experience. We wanted to create a complete immersive sound and music experience where music and score and songs is kind of one immersive, unique experience. You can't tell a difference when a song starts or if a score, it all flows into each other. So, you know, I was very early on getting to work with artists and songwriters. While I was working on the score, I was also producing the songs for the movie. You know, half of them are in Spanish. I wrote half of them with Mexican artists. And then the second half, Ryan and I went to Lagos, to Nigeria together, and worked with some incredible African artists, and we actually—that's also where we recorded a lot of "Lift Me Up," and we also did the trailer there. We recorded the "No Woman, No Cry" with Temps right when we got off the airplane.
We knew we wanted some representation from the continent, you know. And when we were on the flight, and I was thinking about "No Woman, No Cry," we had internet on that flight. Thank God. So we was like looking up the lyrics to the song, and like when you know Bob Marley was obviously an incredible songwriter, you know, but the lyrics in that song just felt like it could have been, you know, it could have been applied to the movie so well, and we had the thought to have, you know, because it's a song written by a man, you know, about women, you know, and encouraging them to persevere, and the songs about other things too, but having a woman sing it, you know, we thought like, man, well, that's it, you know, because Bob Marley's no longer with us, obviously, you know, Chad's no longer with us, but we knew Shuri was going to be carrying that torch for him, and Romano's going to be carrying that torch for him, and so it just made a lot of sense, and then it's got that bridge, that everything is going to be all right bridge that got, you know, reinterpreted many times, really in the 90s a lot too, like with a lot of songs. And I was, you know, I was thinking about Kendrick's song. So then we Ludwig put them together.
Yeah, you were like, can we mash them up? And I was like, sure. And and then we landed in Lagos, recorded with Thames. I went back to the hotel room and just kind of put those two songs together, and it was perfect.
Let's talk about the impact of this film. And, you know, as we've said, little boys seeing, you know, strong women out there, you know, little girls having these role models. What is that like for you to have these reactions, you know, and see, you know, on TikTok or social media?
I hope that people see the film and feel less alone in whatever their feelings are, you know. The pandemic, political atmosphere, environmental atmosphere, it caused a lot of isolation, a lot of trauma, and we were forced to deal with things in a way that felt like we were more alone than normal, or maybe that we should be, you know. Our friend and collaborator Chadwick touched a lot of people with his work, with his excellence, you know, not just his work on the screen, but just how he lived, how he moved through life, you know. He touched a lot of people, and we were fortunate to have been involved with that. I think his passing touched a lot of people, but he also passed at a time, like Nate mentioned, where we lost a lot, you know, where we lost a lot. So us having a film out there like this, that has these deep conversations, you know, with characters that you don't often get to see, but that has these deep human conversations, these universal conversations, uncomfortable conversations, you know. I hope that the impact is that people feel less alone, you know. People feel less alone.
That's the team behind Black Panther: Wakanda Forever, which starts streaming in February on Disney+. And that's it for this edition of Variety's Award Circuit Podcast. Zachary Levin edited this episode, and Michael Schneider is the producer. Be sure to subscribe to the Award Circuit Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Also, head on over to Variety.com and click on the Award Circuit tab to find the latest awards predictions and key races, as well as your daily fix of news, analysis, and reviews. For Jazz Tanke, Janelle Riley, and Clayton Davis, I'm Michael Schneider, and we'll see you on the circuit.